makes these out of just
no.
Pearls and plants and everything.
The Senate Judiciary Committee will come to order. Today is Tuesday, May 12th. We are together for a very brief time. We have two individuals to confirm. Both, I'm sure, will pass the committee with flying colors. And then we have a very short bill that is actually a resolution that we'd like to help Senator Dill with to get him to the Rules Committee. With our first confirmation, I believe this young gentleman has been through the committee once before, so we welcome back former Representative Doug Fuller back to the committee to be confirmed yet for a second term on the Board of Judicial Standards. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Doug Fuller. I'm from northern Minnesota up in Bemidji. And just for the record, again, I know I've told you this, Madam Chair, but your staff is wonderful.
Thank you.
Your concern and theirs for the amount of travel it takes to get down and timing for the committee hearings is very much appreciated. So thank you.
Very good. Members, the governor's the application and Representative Fuller's resume and the governor's letter are in your packets. Do you have any questions for Representative Fuller? Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I'm curious. Are there any people of color or people with disabilities on the Board of Judicial Standards?
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, at this time, no, it is made up of just men and women.
Just men and women?
Well, they're... Well, there are not. Very good. No, there are not.
Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins,
it seems like most of the appointments that I have seen go through the various committees that I'm on, there have been no people of color. There have been nobody other than, you know,
men and women.
Men and women. And I get really frustrated with this. I mean, we have communities of color all over the state. They provide so much to our state, and yet on these boards, they're just missing in action. And I'm really frustrated by this. Not that I think that you both wouldn't be terrific, but can't we expand beyond the horizons here a little bit?
Madam Chair.
Senator Shy.
Madam Chair, I certainly agree with the point Senator Higgins is making. I think we should convey our concern to the governor, not for the two gentlemen who are here at all, but that we would like to see a representative or a better cross-section of our society, but these are too fine.
Mr. Sexton.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, Pat Sexton, I'm on the board. This is will be, hopefully, my second term as well. I replaced a person of color when I was originally appointed in 2004, and there was a person of color while I was on there the first couple of years. So I think, while at this point there aren't any, in the past there have been.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins,
I note that Mr. Sexton is an Irish citizen with an EU passport. Which is very cool.
That's correct, Madam Chair. Senator Higgins, because my grandfather was born in Ireland, that makes my father an Irish citizen. And through paperwork, I can be an Irish citizen. But my kids cannot be. So.
Oh, really?
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But you are a U.S. citizen with dual citizenship.
I've never checked it out. But yes, Madam Chair, I think I've got an EU passport. It's got my name. It's purple. It says the EU on it. So I think I could use it as an EU member.
That's very cool. Well, you know, I think I'm trying to remember what Asian country it is that if you are maybe Taiwan, don't quote me on this, but if you are, even though you're a United States citizen, if you are from, was born there and was once a citizen there, you can vote in their elections. And I can't remember exactly, but you can. Interesting. Interesting. Well, any questions for Representative Fuller? Seeing none. Senator Higgins move that the appointment of Douglas J. Fuller be sent to the full Senate with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam.
I told you it was going to be a tough day. And then Mr. Sexton has already been before us. Mr. Sexton, his first appointment did not come through our committee or the current committee. But this reappointment is coming through us for the first time. Mr. Sexton, we've already talked about your EU passport. You are being appointed as a public member, but are you also an attorney?
Madam Chair, no. By definition, I cannot be an attorney.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Senator Scheib?
Chair, if I might ask, Mr. Sexton, what kind of a time commitment? It has nothing to do with your serving. I'm just curious to know what's involved for a citizen who's this board.
Mr. Sexton?
Madam Chair, Senator Scheib, typically, not counting travel, which Mr. Fuller has to do and I don't, the typical time commitment is about a week before. We meet once a month on Fridays, and about 8 or 9 times a year we'll meet. And those meetings are in Minneapolis and will last anywhere between 2 and 4 and sometimes 5 hours if we have a big agenda and some complexities or controversial cases. But we'll get a stack about this thick the week before. And then it's just a matter of several hours of reading through those cases and then the several hours on Friday. So the time commitment I don't think is great. It's great for that 1 week trying to figure out a way to get all that stuff read thoroughly. But I don't look at it as a time commitment. It's so much fun and it's such interesting work. And it's, I think, so important that that I really enjoy it.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, Mr. Sexton, I see that you also were a member of the Supreme Court Committee on Rules of the Board of Judicial Standards. Was that because you were on the board that came with the responsibilities as a citizen member or a non-lawyer member?
Mr. Sexton?
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, the impetus for that was, I don't know if I can take credit for it, but there was a case in front of the board where, without divulging any information, we wanted to issue a warning ticket. And there was literally no way in our rules to issue a warning ticket. We had to tell this judge they were guilty of something. So myself and the executive director went to Justice Paul Anderson, who is a friend from years ago, and said, this doesn't work. We need to think of something better. We need to have that option, that tool. There were other issues, I think, out there about the board. So the Supreme Court put together a committee to look at our rules, what needed changing, et cetera. And the Senator Betzold was on that committee. There were others who had an interest in board, the way the board works. And it seemed to make sense to have former board members, and there were former board members. But because of what we do is, I don't want to say secret, but it's non-public because you don't want allegations about judges to be in the public. It made sense to have some board members on this committee as well to talk about how the board actually works. So I think that's one of the reasons I was appointed to that rules committee. And the Supreme Court recently came out, I think, a month to 6 weeks ago and essentially accepted the recommendations of this committee to change the way the board works.
Senator Scheib.
Chair, I'd like to move that we recommend confirmation of Patrick D. Sexton.
Very good. Senator Scheib moves.
Judicial Standards, excuse me.
That the appointment of Mr. Patrick D. Sexton be sent to the full Senate with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you both.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For making the
time.
Senator
Scheib.
Senator Higgins.
To move that we as a committee send a letter to the governor with our concerns about the fact that we seem to see so very few people of color being recommended for the boards and commissions that he recommends.
We will do that. We will do that. I will make a note of that, and we'll put a letter together, and if all the committee members would like to sign that, I will make that available to all of us. Thank you both. Thank you very much. Let's see. We have Senate File 1623, Senator Dill. And, you know, members, usually resolutions get introduced as resolutions, and then they get sent to the Rules Committee, and then we vote on them. But once in a while, a resolution is significant enough that it gets introduced as a bill. And this resolution was introduced as a bill, was sent to us. And my inexperience thought that this was just a resolution, not to minimize what the resolution does, and that it should just have gone to the Rules Committee. But apparently, because it's a bill, that we then need to process it as a committee. So we, given the confirmations we had to do today, we wanted to accommodate Senator Dill. And also this Senate file, the companion to Senate File 1623, I believe has already passed in the other body. So we want to make sure that it has a companion to match up to. So Senator Dill, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This resolution deals with the Dakota Indians and their removal from the state of Minnesota following the outbreak in 1862. And if you look at the authors of this bill, Kubley, Roebling, Fredrickson, and Murphy, those four senators represent the four Dakota bands at Granite Falls, Morton, Shakopee, and Prairie Island. And I don't represent those areas, but I have a strong interest in Indian history, my house author is the one that initiated this to start with. Now, I'm just going to read this resolution so you can understand what we're talking about here. We're memorializing the President and Congress to repeal the federal legislation of 1863 ordering the removal of Dakota people from Minnesota and the Dakotas. Whereas in the aftermath of the events of 1862, the delay of United States treaty payments to the Dakota, the refusal of white traders to sell to them, the resulting starvation on the reservation, and the ensuing Dakota conflict, white sentiment against Indian people was at its height, and many were pressing for the execution of 303 Dakota and mixed blood men. And whereas fearing that there would be further violence if he did not act, and to appease public feeling, Abraham Lincoln cooperated with the efforts of Congress to remove Indian people unilaterally, without even the semblance of an agreement by treaty, by signing an act for the removal of the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Mittawakaton, and Wapakuta bands of Sioux or Dakota Indians, and for the disposition of their lands in Minnesota and Dakota. An action which ultimately ignited the Plains Indian Wars and brought 30 more years of conflict. And whereas the act remains in federal law to this day, despite the fact that its terms are obsolete and its presence is a continuing offense, now therefore be it resolved by the legislature of the state of Minnesota that it urges the Congress of the United States to repeal United States Statutes at Large, Volume 12, page 819, Chapter 119, and pages 803 to 804, Chapter 103. Be it further resolved that the Secretary of State of the State of Minnesota is directed to prepare copies of this memorial and transmit them to the United States, to the President of the United States, the President and Secretary of the United States Senate, the Speaker and the Clerk of the United States, House of Representatives, and the Minnesota Senators and Representatives in Congress. Well, that's what the resolution is, and I would like to make one amendment, ask somebody here to make an amendment. In the title, on lines 1.3, if we could delete the words "and the Dakotas."
I'll move that, Madam Chair.
I would move that.
So Senator Paraso moves the deletion on line 1.13 and the Dakotas to the period. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, members, I have a copy of the 1863 law right here. It was passed on March 3rd, 1863, and the first part of it says, an act for the removal of the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Mittawakaton, and Wapakuta bands of Sioux or Dakota Indians and for the disposition of their lands in Minnesota and the Dakotas. Now, I'd just like to mention one thing here to kind of provide some historical perspective on this. In 1851, there was a treaty signed at Traverse des Sioux, where the Dakota Indians sold 28 million acres of land for 7.5 cents an acre. That was in 1851. Mm. And it was kind of like on a contract for deed where they were going to get paid over time for this, the sale of this 28 million acres. And they would be confined to a reservation along the Minnesota River. Well, 10 years later, the payments weren't showing up. The federal government was not honoring their end of the deal. And in the meantime, there were some parts of the 28 million acres that had been sold for 7.5 cents that had risen in value to $4 to $5 an acre. So it was really a time of anguish and disappointment in the federal government on the side of the Indians because they weren't getting paid for the land that they sold good and cheap. And it kind of reminds me of the gambling contract that we signed with the Indians years later. And because it turned out to be a lucrative contract for the Indians, now that some of the white people want to change that contract, well, if that's okay to change that contract, it should be okay for the Indians to change their contract, which where they sold land too cheap at 7.5 cents an acre. So it's not, when you look at what happened in the 1860s and 50s and how that was handled, we should learn from that and not try to change this gambling contract today. But this thing has nothing to do with the gambling and so forth. It just has to do with correcting something that was kind of offensive. To think that we still have an 1863 law in the books ordering the Dakota Indians out of the state of Minnesota is offensive. And I have talked to Congressman Colin Peterson about this personally, and he's willing to try to take some action in the U.S. Congress to try to correct this. Now, to support this resolution, I have two people here from the Indian Affairs Council, Anna Marie Hill on my right, and Pete Palma, who's a cultural resource specialist with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council on my left, and they would like to make a statement.
Well, to both of you, welcome to the committee. Ms. Hill, would you like to start?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this resolution. My name is Anna Marie Hill. I'm the current executive director of Indian Affairs Council for the state of Minnesota and a member of the Red Lake Nation. Representative Ertl first approached me this last summer when he was appointed to head the Lincoln Commission about whether or not this act was still enforced on the books, and this was the first I'd heard of that, and we went forward, and he did his research, of course, and as a good history professor does, and he also has gain support from various tribes and tribal leaders and the Urban Indian Affairs Council for the state of Minnesota. And he, again, I just want to reiterate, has done his homework and got the support that he needed to move forward with this. And we support your efforts in this resolution. Thank you.
Okay. Is it Mr. Palma?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'll just, for 1 second, like to say that in my line of work with the Cultural Resource Department of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, we've recently come across, it was a couple years ago, a significant burial site that was related to the Dakota communities, and that their lineage here is significant in the years past, and that this action being taken here is an appropriate one. I hope your committee follows through, and I'm very much thank you for your concern in this matter.
Well, thank you. Senator Dill, I'm personally very moved by this resolution and the fact that you brought it forward. I think that oftentimes that's what it takes to be able to create the historical and contemporary contrast to make this kind of action meaningful, I think. And so I really appreciate both the symbolism of what we're doing here, But the heartfelt way in which you brought this issue forward is means a lot to me personally, and I think that it means a lot to the communities that are affected by this. You know, when we look at things like this, I'm always conflicted. Because in some ways, I want things like this to be kept in perpetuity in the books, so that our children and grandchildren and our descendants, when they go back and research, they get to see and experience the truth of what really happened to our peoples as it is in the books and the laws. And yet there's a tugging at the heart to want to undo what's in the books. And so I have to tell you that while I'm deeply touched by what it is that we want to do with this resolution, there's a perverse part of me that is stubbornly wanting to keep this in the books, because a long time from now, when we're all gone, I still want, you know, our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren to be able to look back and see this in the books to say that this did happen and that we can't erase this from our history. And so I hope that even though we're able to, or our federal government are able to and will make it an effort to repeal this, that because we've had this conversation today and because this resolution is a bill, will be enacted with all of our support, that the repealing of this from federal law doesn't erase what has transpired in our history. So thank you very much for doing this.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you for that statement. Mm-hmm. And if this language is removed in the next 2 or 3 years, it will have been in law for 150 years, so there'll be plenty of time for people to look back and see what it said at that period of time.
Yeah. Any further discussions, members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, I think I've shared with you on occasion my concern about our state seal. And I seem to recall, and perhaps Ms. Pontius recalls, we did change this to have the farmer looking at the Indian. Am I correct? We did that in the early 80s?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senators, I believe so. Mm-hmm. It was a minor change, but it was just symbolic.
And it was symbolic, but the poem written by Governor Sibley's wife has bothered me for a long time. I think it is he who designed the state seal, and his wife was a writer, and she wrote a poem about the seal, and I feel it's racist, and so I'm kind of, in the back of my mind is always, I don't want to change the seal. That's got history as well that we never talk about. I certainly think that the Indian should appear in the seal. It's an important, vital part of our history, but we need to talk about what is underlying that. So I just thought I'd offer that because I think there are other things, you know, that we might talk about, and it's my fault that I haven't done anything about it till now, but Senator Dill, thank you for bringing this forward, and thank you for coming.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Dill.
Members, just a little more history. Governor Sibley had two wives.
This was Sarah.
Mm-hmm. His first wife was a Dakota Indian woman, and his second wife was a white woman. And as I understand it, when his Indian daughter was married, he gave her away at the wedding. Mm-hmm. So he still maintained relationships with both families.
Any further discussions on Senate File 1623?
It's a time to move the bill amendment.
Sure is, Senator Pearsall.
Senator
Pearsall moves that Senate File 1623, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Let the record reflect that was a unanimous vote. And Senator Dill, it will go to Rules. If you need any help, I'm sure we will all be willing to show up to help you liberate it from Rules and send it to the floor. I don't think you have a problem, but thank you very much.
Yeah,
and
to
our two witnesses, thank you for coming.
Yeah,
and
you.
Members, thank you for making the time to be here, and we are adjourned.